And now, part two of this novel, Pimpf.
I hate days like this. It's a rainy Monday morning and I'm late in to work at the laundry because of a technical fault on the tube. When I get to my desk, the first thing I find is a note from Human Resources that says one of their management team wants to talk to me soonest about playing computer games at work. And to put the cherry on top of the shit pie, the office's coffee percolator is empty because none of the other inmates in this goddamn loony bin can be asked refilling it. It's enough to make me long for a high place and a rifle. But in the end, I head for Human Resources to take the bull by the horns, decaffeinated and mean as only a decaffeinated Bob can be. Over in the dizzying heights of HR, the furniture is fresh and the windows recently cleaned. It's a far cry from the dingy rat's nest of Ops Division, where I normally spend my working time. But ours is not to wonder why, at least in public. "Miss McTougall will see you now," says the receptionist on the front desk, looking down her nose at me pityingly. "Do try not to shed on the carpet. We had it steam cleaned this morning." Bastards. I slouch across the thick cream wool towards the inner sanctum of Emma McDougall, Senior Vice Superintendent, Personnel Management, Operations, trying not to gawk like a resentful yokel at the luxuries on parade. It's not the first time I've been here, but I can never shake the sense that I'm entering another world, graced by visitors of ministerial import and elevated budget. The dizzy heights of the real civil service, as opposed to us poor Morlocks in Ops Division who keep everything running.
"Mr. Howard, do come in."
I straighten instinctively when Emma addresses me. She has that effect on most people. She was born to be a headmistress or a tax inspector, but unfortunately she ended up in Human Resources by mistake, and she's been letting us know about it ever since.
"Have a seat."
The room reeks of quiet luxury by laundry standards. My chair is big, comfortable, and hasn't been bumped, scraped, and abraded into a pile of kindling by generations of visitors. The office is bright and airy, and the window is clean and has a row of attractively unbrowned potted plants sitting before it. The computer squatting on her desk is at least twice as expensive as anything I've been able to get my hands on via official channels, and it's not even switched on.
"How good of you to make time to see me."
She smiles like a razor. I stifle a sigh. It's going to be one of those sessions. "I'm a busy man." Let's see if deadpan will work,
"I'm sure you are. Nevertheless."
She taps a piece of paper sitting on her blotter, and I tense.
"I've been hearing disturbing reports about you, Bob."
"Oh, bollocks. What kind of reports?" I ask warily. Her smile's cold enough to frost glass.
"Let me be blunt. I've had a report, I hesitate to say who from, about you playing computer games in the office."
"Oh, that.
I see. According to this report, you've been playing rather a lot of Neverwinter Nights recently."
She runs her finger down the printout with relish.
"You've even sequestrated an old departmental server to run a persistent realm, a multi-user online dungeon."
She looks up, staring at me intently.
"What have you got to say for yourself?"
I shrug. What's to say? She's got me banged to rights.
Indeed.
She taps a finger on the page.
"Last Tuesday you played Neverwinter Nights for 4 hours. This Monday you played it for 2 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon, staying on for an hour after your official flexi-time shift ended. That's 6 straight hours. What have you got to say for yourself?"
"Only 6? I lean forwards.
"Yes, 6 hours.
She taps the memo again.
"Bob, what are we paying you for?"
I shrug. "To put the hack into Hack and Slay."
"Yes, Bob, we're paying you to search online role-playing games for threats to national security, but you only averaged 4 hours a day last week. Isn't this rather a poor use of your time?"